Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Justin. How are you feeling?
I'm doing okay. Got any updates?
Yeah, there's one really big update. For those of you who listen to our podcast regularly, you know that we have not covered the Delphi murders of Abby and Libby. It's a case that I follow all the time, and I'm really hoping for justice. But I will make a comment here because, at least as of the time that we're recording this, a judge has unsealed most of the probable cause affidavit for Richard Allen, who is the individual that was arrested. And there was a lot of controversy with this because the families of Abby and Libby, they did not want this probable cause affidavit released. They didn't want it unsealed. They wanted it kept hidden until the trial because they felt like that would give them the best chance of getting justice. But that's not what happened. And there are those that said that Richard Allen, who is at this point not convicted of anything, he has his rights. And his rights would mean that a request like this to have this document unsealed, that should be taken into consideration. So I kind of see both sides. I'm definitely on the side of Abby and Libby when it comes to justice. And I hope that the prosecution knows what they're doing. But until this trial gets underway, eventually, we just don't know what's going to happen.
So, Aaron, tonight's case is it's one that I heard and read about when it happened. And I think it was right after this case, or maybe shortly after this case, is when I first heard the term rape culture. That wasn't used in mainstream media. It wasn't used on social media. But I feel, my own personal opinion, I feel that this is the case that kind of coined that phrase. This is the first time I heard that phrase. And this is going to be a rough episode. So just forewarning to people, it's definitely not an easy one for us to cover. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, and before I get to that, I think whatever the case is that helps to bring light to what rape culture is and the problems with it, there are so many terrible events that occur in this world on a daily basis, but you know, it's always our hope that people are better educated, learn about the ways that society itself has just kept steering people wrong. When we can see the problems in society, we can make adjustments. And there are definitely adjustments that need to be made, whether it's here at home or abroad. There are things that could be handled better. There are points of view that need to be changed for equality, for safety. Tonight, we're talking about the 2012 Delhi gang rape that occurred in New Delhi, India. It happened on December 16th, 2012.
So it was a Sunday. A 22-year-old woman, a physiotherapy student, and her 28-year-old male friend went to see The Life of Pi at a movie theater in southern New Delhi. And at around 8:30 p.m., they left the movie and they were looking for transportation to get back home. She lived in southeastern Delhi, and there aren't any public buses running at that time. And of course, rickshaws aren't going to go that far because it's, you know, it's probably over 10 miles. So they're having a lot of trouble, right, with trying to find how to get home, and they're looking for a bus or anything.
Right. And they do have one rickshaw that says, I can take you to Munirka in southern Delhi, and maybe you'll find someone to take you from there back home. But there's a bus that comes along, and the driver, or someone on the bus anyway, starts calling out saying, anyone going to the Dwarka area? Well, this woman and her friend get on the bus, and they paid 20 rupees. That's about 26 cents US. So they chose a seat on the left side of the bus behind some other passengers.
These other passengers are all men, and they're essentially staring her down and making comments. This whole bus ride, you know, from the get-go is not going well.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, this starts off with criticisms of, why are you out so late? What kind of a girl are you to be out this late with this guy? Now, what this couple didn't know is that the men on this bus were pretending that it was a public bus, but it wasn't supposed to be operating at that time. They were using it, pretending to be a public bus, so they could commit crimes.
All the men on this bus, they know each other, and this is planned. They're not just riding a bus, and the driver knows the passengers, everybody knows each other. And this is all their scam to go around and rob people.
And they had already had a victim that evening. There was a carpenter. This was about 10 minutes before. His name was Ram Adar. He was on his way home from work. Well, he paid 10 rupees. And after the doors were shut and the bus drove away, he was beaten and robbed of about 1,500 rupees. And his phone was taken from him. And then they pushed him out of the bus as it was moving, near the Indian Institute of Technology campus in South Delhi.
So they get you on the bus, they close the doors, driver starts driving down the road so you can't get off the bus, and they attack. And now we have a couple that is their next victims.
This is a frightening situation, just thinking about it, Justin. You can't just get off of a moving bus. I mean, the door is shut, and then you're surrounded. There are literally five people who can attack you at one time.
As these men start this conflict with this couple, her male friend is standing up for her and saying, you know, you need to shut up. And why are you saying these things to us? And of course, it just gets more and more heated until these men start attacking him.
Yeah, they have these iron rods that are apparently on the bus. They're used to operate jacks for changing tires. And they use this to beat him and to pin him against seats to control him. And while that's happening, four to five men drag this 22-year-old woman to the back of the bus, where they start attacking her. And she's being beaten, she's being bitten, and she's being raped. Now, of course, she's fighting back as best she can, and she's hitting and kicking at her attackers. But like I said, about five men attacking her.
And at this point, the bus, it's going through police checkpoints. It's going through areas of town where you have to stop and verify who you are. And they're going through these checkpoints while attacking these people at the back of the bus. And the police that are on duty that night, they're just, they don't care. They're just talking to the driver, not looking into the bus. I guess the windows were tinted. It's nighttime. They can't see in, but they're not even looking or questioning why there's a bus running at this time.
It's said that these officers are undertrained and they're probably overstretched in terms of the work they're doing. But either way, there's no safety point here. There's no stop where there is help. So it's just torture.
And so they end up heading towards the airport, but then they turn the bus around and the driver takes a moment to go to the back and rape and assault this woman while another man drives the bus.
They also used iron rods to injure her severely.
At around 9:54 p.m., they drag them to the back of the bus to toss them out, but they can't get the emergency door open. So then they drag them up to the front of the bus and they throw them off the moving bus onto the side of the highway. Two people are just thrown off the bus, barely any clothes on, and traffic is going by, but people aren't stopping. They lay on the side of the road for, it's said, up to 45 minutes, but people are slowing down and driving off. But eventually, a crowd of people starts surrounding them and looking at them. But I guess nobody wants to take responsibility. Nobody wants to insert themselves into this situation. So eventually, one of them flags down a city worker, and that person ends up calling a control room, like his dispatcher, who then calls the police. And then the police come and they find this couple and a group of people just standing around looking at them, and they put a blanket over them. And then eventually they get, you know, an ambulance to take them to a hospital. But even after they're horribly beaten and she's raped, they spent almost an hour on the side of the road before people even responded to them and got them help.
Now, while that's happening, the men on the bus have stopped somewhere at an alley and they take the clothing they had taken from the couple and they're getting the clothing wet so they can wipe down the bus because it's covered in all kinds of fluids now. And then after that, they start a fire and they burn up all the clothing except for the man's shoes.
They've kept their money, their wallets, their phones, and this guy's shoes.
Her family is worried because she's not returned home. This isn't like her. And at about 11:15 p.m., her dad got a call from the hospital telling him the terrible news that his daughter had been in an accident. And so he had a friend take him there. And when he arrived, he saw his daughter on a gurney. She was covered by a green blanket. Her eyes were closed. Now, he told the media, "I thought she was unconscious, but when I laid my hand on her forehead, she opened her eyes. She was crying. I told her, 'It'll be all right. Have strength, and everything will be all right.'" The police then had a conversation with him, and at 2 in the morning, he called his wife and sons so that they could meet him at the hospital. And apparently, he just couldn't even tell them what had happened to their daughter, to their sister.
Initially told him a terrible accident, but once he arrived, it was very obvious, and they had to tell him. She told him, but he didn't want to, he couldn't hear it. It was too much for this father. So he wanted to get the rest of the family there for support because the way she looked, it was just a horrible mess. And the doctors didn't think she would survive through the night.
Her injuries were extensive. She had injuries to her face, her head, her abdomen, her genitals. She had been beaten with iron rods. She had bite marks all over her body. There was extensive damage, they said, to her intestines and uterus. And when she went into surgery, the doctors removed the most damaged portions of her intestines. They tried to clean things up as much as possible because they were worried about infection. But like you said, there wasn't much hope here. The doctors at this hospital, at Safdarjung Hospital, did their best to try and save her life.
Her male friend that she was with, he was admitted to the hospital also, but he had fractures that, you know, broken his arms and stuff. So he was able to leave in a wheelchair, but he was still beaten badly. So now the race is on to find who did this, right?
Monday, December 17th, 2012, it said that the police traced the bus because the male victim in this case gave them a lot of details. They also looked up the cameras in the area, the CCTV cameras in the area. This was in Mahipalpur, and they were able to see this white bus pass twice an hour before the victims had been reported. We know that they took this couple out a ways and eventually turned around and came back the way they had come. So that fits with what they're seeing on the footage. The side of the bus says Yadav. And so because of that, they were able to ask around a bus station near Munirka, and other bus drivers were able to identify the bus. Yeah. They said, oh yeah, that's a bus that takes children to school in South Delhi. So then they locate the owner, Dinesh Yadav. And he had apparently bribed officials several times after being caught with an unlicensed fleet. So the owner gave the address of a person named Ram Singh. They also got sketches of the men involved as described by the male survivor. So the police, they do find this bus, and Ram is sitting inside of it. And there was blood on his shirt, his shoes, and they could tell that the bus had recently been washed down. And apparently, he spoke right away, Justin.
He even pulled out these rusty iron rods that they had used from a compartment on the bus and gave those over to the police.
As well as the names of other men that were on the bus.
One of which was his own brother. Ram Singh was 33 years old, and he was obviously the driver. His brother was Mukesh. He was 26 years old. He lived with his brother. Akshay Thacker, who was 28 years old, and Raju, he was only 17 years old at this time.
At the time, they were not going to give out the name of what they say is a minor because he wasn't 18 yet. They weren't going to give out his name. But obviously, we're covering this years after the fact.
And it's his age is relevant to the case.
And the others were Vinay Sharma and Pawan Gupta. They were 20 and 19 years old, respectively.
They also didn't want to give out the name of the victims, especially the woman. And so she was given lots of different aliases and nicknames, right, Aaron?
Her name that I feel like was most common was Nirbhaya, which means fearless one. They also called her Delhi Braveheart or Delhi's daughter. And I feel like this is something that we can all understand because so many people rallied to this cause. So many people were upset and disturbed by what had happened here that they all wanted to defend her. So there were protests. And, you know, these are major protests. They had to bring out fire hoses, arrest people. But thousands of people showed up to either pray or to protest. And, you know, these demonstrations mean something because the people themselves had had enough. It's not like this is the only thing that had ever happened there.
Yeah.
It's a common thing for women in India to be routinely subjected to sexual harassment, especially on public transit.
And it's common for them to be raped and assaulted. And if they report the crime, either nothing happens or they're told that they shouldn't have been out that late, or they're the ones that instigated this crime against them.
That's what we mean when we say rape culture is the culture itself is promoting rape by saying, well, it was the woman's fault because of the way she dressed, or because she's out at 9:30 at night, you know, she's tempting these men, what have you. And that's just a small part of it, but that is a major component of this case, that there are people in India who feel this way and in our country as well, Justin.
Many countries. But the police are gathering this information and this evidence, and it's actually a decent response for what had happened. I think that there was a lot of pressure on them because in a country of, 1.3 billion people, a lot of them are upset about this. And a lot of them are protesting and marching in the streets.
December 19th, 2012, at 10 in the morning, Nirbhaya was able to have another surgery. And the doctors had spoken about this, saying she was quite alert and spoke to her mother and brother, as at the time there was no tube, because normally she would have a tube. So because she was going into surgery, they gave her a little time with the family. And her mother ended up telling her husband a bit of the story. And his response was, "I don't have the words to describe the incident. All I can say is they're not human, not even animals. They're not of this world."
I don't disagree with him at all.
I know, Justin, whenever we cover a case, it's hearing the words or reading the words from family members who have had to go through something like this. It really drives it home, you know, in a way that maybe other parts of the story don't. We cover the criminals and what they'd been up to. That's why even in this case, you and I are minimizing talking about the criminals in this case, their backgrounds and stuff, because they're not the important part of this case.
They're the worst part of this case. So she's having to go into surgery. They've already had to remove a large portion of her small intestine.
They had to place a tube between the outside of her abdomen and the duodenum. They had to be able to remove fluids from her stomach. And they were also feeding her intravenously.
They said that she was in critical condition, but stable at this time. But she was on and off ventilator support. She was in and out of consciousness. This was a very touch and go situation for the medical staff and the doctors, and they were beginning to wonder if they had the means to give her the care she needed to get her to survive, right?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see, and I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
And the courts were moving quickly because there was a hearing for these men. And Vinay Sharma said that he had beaten up the male, but said he didn't do anything to the woman. He did tell the magistrate to hang me. Pawan Gupta admitted his involvement. Sharma, Gupta, Mukesh Singh, and Ram Singh were sent to police remand. And meanwhile, women's rights groups were demanding measures to make the area safer.
You can just imagine if these attacks are happening on such a frequent basis, But even when they are reporting the attacks, they're not getting a lot of response from their law enforcement. I mean, these groups are asking for safety. They're asking for security, but instead they're met with disperse. Instead, they're met with get out of our face.
Yeah, it was getting late in the year, December 23rd. There were orders that protesters not show up. You know, don't come here, don't protest, but they kept gathering in the streets and the protests became violent and water cannons, you know, the hoses were used, tear gas was dispersed out there, and a constable was fatally injured. I mean, he died the next day after he suffered his injury. And the prime minister and the president of Congress had to address this attack in televised speeches. They talked about their sympathy for the victim and her family, but the protesters, this isn't enough. They want action.
We've seen similar protests here in America when we see a terrible injustice and we don't feel like we're getting the response, the justified response to that injustice when something terrible happens. And this is how society responds, is they say, okay, we're going to ask for what we want. We're going to march in the streets. We're not getting what we want. You're not listening to us. So maybe if we start burning things down, you'll take it a little bit more seriously. I don't know. There's different ways to look at it.
December 25th, there was an article released talking about how Nirbhaya had sepsis, a blood infection, and that she had internal bleeding. Doctors were trying to stabilize her, but she had a very high temperature of up to 103 degrees, and she was on a ventilator. And they say that she was fighting as best she could. But that night, her heart rate dropped, and that's when the hospital began calling for outside doctors, other people who could maybe aid them in this unique circumstance.
Ultimately, decide on airlifting her to another hospital in Singapore. And they have the external affairs minister expediting these orders and expediting her family members' passports and visas to get her to another hospital in the hopes that they can take care of her.
Yeah, this was a somewhat controversial thing at the time, I guess, because the hospital she had been in was considered to be a very capable hospital. So why would they have to move her? This is just my opinion, Justin. I think if they're wanting to move her, they feel like they've done everything they can and they don't think they can keep her alive. So this is a way to have another chance to keep her alive. Maybe another hospital, you know, maybe they can save her. But I think this is them admitting, we don't think we can do this.
It seemed to be driven from the medical staff and not something where the family was saying, you're not doing enough. We need to move her out of here. It seemed to be more the hospital's decision. So I understand it's controversial. I understand that some people are like, they should have moved her sooner, but moving somebody in her condition is risky in and of itself.
No doubt. They did consult a heart surgeon asking if she could be safely transferred, whether this would be worth the risk, you know? And it was their opinion that she should be able to do this. It's basically transfer her, or we really don't think she's going to make it. But Singapore was, I think they were looking at the distance, Justin, how long it would take. What would she have to go through to do this? And Singapore, Mount Elizabeth Hospital in Singapore, seemed to be the best option in the distance they felt comfortable transferring her within.
And the night before her flight, her father told her, everything's going to be okay and you're going to be home soon. And that made her smile because she was excited about getting better and getting home to be with her family. Her father said that, I put my hand on her forehead. She asked me if I'd had any dinner, and then she gestured for me to go to sleep. I held her hand and kissed it. I told her to take a rest and not to worry, and she closed her eyes. That would be the last time she was conscious and communicating.
On Thursday, she made it to Mount Elizabeth's intensive care unit, and the CEO of the hospital that night spoke on her condition, saying it remains extremely critical. a multidisciplinary team of doctors is taking care of her and taking all possible steps to stabilize her condition. Justin is just 2 days later, early in the morning, when Nirbhaya suffered a fatal heart attack. This was 13 days after the attack on that bus.
If you want to see a whole country get even more pissed off, well, that day they did.
Her uncle, Lalji Singh, spoke about this and said, "This village will not forgive the men who did this. Cut their limbs and set them on fire." Sounds pretty upset to me.
Yeah.
But also, people were lighting candles across India. And there was even a shrine erected at the bus stop where she had boarded the bus. December 30th, Nirbhaya's body was flown back from Singapore to India. And the Prime Minister, Manmohan Singh, and Congress Chief Sonia Gandhi were there at the airport when her body arrived. My understanding is that they did this to let all of India know that this was an important moment and that they were there for it, to welcome Nirbhaya back to the country. Obviously, the public is very upset. There are protests. There are candles being lit. People are praying. And hundreds of people gathered in the heart of New Delhi. They were saying, and they were holding signs referencing "hang rapist."
Yeah.
And they were talking about how often there are rape cases there. It says every 22 minutes, rape case. No punishments. Why? We've said this before, but when you have a so-called justice system, law enforcement system that does not punish rapists enough or often, are they really getting all of the reports?
No.
Are they learning about all the rapes that occur?
No.
They're getting a fraction probably, right?
And a lot of people don't report it because they know they're probably going to be re-victimized by law enforcement, or their case is not going to be taken seriously, or they're not going to, they know that they're going to have to relive this horrible, painful experience, and they're just not willing or able to do that.
January 3rd, 2013, charges against five adult men were filed. The charges were rape, murder, destruction of evidence, kidnapping, and attempted murder. Death penalty? That's on the table. Two of them had confessed, Justin, but
yeah,
that wasn't something they were going to continue to admit to.
Well, they've seen how they have infuriated an entire nation. So now they have to change their tune.
There was a British article that insinuated that the family, most notably the father, gave them permission to publish the woman's name, Nirbhaya's name, her actual name. But he denied this days later, stating he only wanted her name revealed if there was a law named after her.
But her name is out now.
Her name was revealed in 2015, and of course we'll get to that. What do we know about this young woman, Justin?
She was born May 10th, 1990, in Delhi. She grew up in a small village of northern Uttar Pradesh. It's kind of near the border of the banks of the Ganges River. So early in life, she decided she wanted to become a doctor, specifically a neurosurgeon. But as all college students do, they have a moment where they're like, is this what I really want? And she changed her mind. And that's when she became a physiotherapist. Obviously, that's a little bit more of an affordable aspiration because, I have had a brother-in-law that's a doctor, and I think he has over $500,000 in student debt. So yeah, this is a little bit more affordable for her and her family.
But this part of her life, Justin, really demonstrates how this family pulled together, because she said after she gets a job, she's going to help pay for her brother's education. And her father, Badri, would work extra shifts to help pay for her schooling. And he really wanted his children to be educated, as did his wife. So very supportive family here.
And while she was putting herself through school, she was working at an IBM call center at the time. And apparently she only slept 4 to 5 hours a night between studying and working. This is a very capable, very motivated person. And at this call center is when she was introduced to her friend, Alvindra Pandey. He worked as an IT specialist. His father was an attorney. He's from a pretty well-off family, all things considered.
she had been in school and they had spent a lot of time together, but then there was, because of education and work, they hadn't seen each other for a while. And when she returned to Delhi to look for a physiotherapy internship, she asked him if he'd like to see a movie. We haven't seen each other for about a month. Let's go out. Let's do something. So they decided to see The Life of Pi. And this is when this terrible event occurred. It was supposed to be a great evening.
Great reunion. It's a terrible situation.
And one of her brothers said that she was his best friend. She gave the best advice. So the question here is, Justin, when you have so many people saying there's no justice in India, in Delhi, when it comes to rape, it feels like at this time, the authorities know they have to do something here.
Yeah. Set an example.
These men that they've collected, two of whom had confessed originally, they feel like something has to happen here because the public is outraged.
It shouldn't take public outrage to do the right thing, especially in a situation like this. But yeah, pressure's on. Now, it's January 17th, 2013. Raju, who again was 17 years old, he's going to be tried as a juvenile and handled by the Juvenile Justice Board. Now, the other four men, obviously, they're going to be tried as adults. But when this is announced, of course, it's going to cause a lot of commotion and anger that he's 17, just months away from 18, but he is considered a juvenile and they're deciding to treat him as such.
When the court started proceedings against these five adults, all the men pleaded not guilty. But on March 11th, 2013, at 5:45 in the morning, there was a guard at this jail where Ram Singh was being held, who discovered Singh's body hanging from the ceiling grid in his cell. He had taken his own life.
But he shared this cell with other inmates, and there was a lot of rumors going around that he didn't take his own life. It was taken from him by these other cellmates, but there isn't any proof to what actually happened. So the official report is he took his own life.
But you could almost imagine that people may have wanted to take his life for what he had done.
In America, we have our sense of prison justice.
And Mukesh was appealing and seeking mercy because while he was in prison awaiting execution, he was repeatedly sexually assaulted and attacked. And he wanted the prosecutor and the judge to know this so he could get mercy. So I guess they do have some jailhouse justice there in India.
Right. I'm just going by the rumors. And again, maybe it isn't based on anything real. You could be right. Maybe there is no prison justice, as it were, over there, as some people like to say. And maybe this is just what some in the public like to think because it helps them deal with this terrible tragedy.
Yeah. They think that justice was served. You know, he got what was coming to him.
So, of course, the male victim in this case, the male survivor, was Alvendra Pandey, and he was testifying in court, and he was able to identify the bus. He was able to talk about the men that perpetrated these crimes.
Which, that's what we call direct evidence, and I realize that eyewitness testimony is questionable, but when you're locked on a vehicle with these men for, you know, what is it, almost 40 minutes, you know who they are. You know what happened that night. And I think that anyone and everyone would believe his statements.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends, might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
And they were backed up with forensics too, because there were clothes taken from some of the men. They were tested for DNA, for blood, and the iron rods that were handed over, those were tested as well, confirming that the woman's blood, the woman's DNA was on some of these items. So, you know, between the eyewitness testimony, the direct evidence, and the circumstantial evidence, the forensic stuff, this is a pretty good, solid case, I would say. Mm-hmm. So what happened with Raju's trial? Because his finished up in the summer of 2013.
Yeah, it was July 11th, 2013. He was found guilty of illegally confining and robbing the carpenter, their first victim of the night, who they had, you know, beaten and robbed. And on the verdict for the murder charge was deferred. So they had to wait. And he would end up being guilty of murder and the gang rape. He was sentenced to the maximum sentence of 3 years probation at home. You want to know what rape culture is? It's when you give somebody 3 years probation or 3 months in jail.
In September of 2013, the public would learn the fates of the four men who were convicted of gang rape, murder, kidnapping, attempted murder, unnatural offenses, among other things, right? Now, we say four men because one of them was dead. They received what I would call a maximum sentence because they were sentenced to death by hanging. And the judge said, in these times when crimes against women are on the rise, courts cannot turn a blind eye to this gruesome act. And this was met with approval from the public, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, they were calling for it before the trials even started. Hang the rapists.
Now, to set this up, though, they said between 2004 and 2013, three people were executed. And there were no executions in the 8 years prior to that. So even though death sentences are handed down, it doesn't seem like they're usually carried out. So it would be a real question in this case, would they actually carry out these death sentences for these four men?
But the government, the court systems, they seem to be expediting these trials. They seem to be rushing these cases because, again, they have a country that's in uproar. They have turmoil happening in the streets.
I might phrase it as prioritizing, because it doesn't seem like they were cutting corners necessarily. They were just making sure these cases were handled because they had to deal with all these protests, the outrage from the public. So this is their way of saying, look, we're handling it. Let this play out.
And of course, when one of these men, the 17-year-old, is getting probation, that doesn't make people happy. I mean, yeah, they're happy about the rest of them being sentenced to death, but they're wanting justice all around.
Now, the minor, Raju, is what he was called. He ended up having to change his name, his identity, because there were concerns about his safety.
You think?
March 20th, 2020, 5:30 a.m., something significant happened. It involved Akshay Thakur, Vinay Sharma, Pawan Gupta, and Mukesh Singh.
A group hanging. They were all simultaneously executed.
This was the first time in 5 years that they had done a hanging. They maintained their innocence, Justin.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone believed them.
No. Because both the victims were able to give enough information. Even she was able to
give enough information at the time. I mean, you got to believe the victim here, especially in such a heinous case where all of these men were involved.
Now, let's follow up with this family. We haven't yet disclosed the name that her mother gave to the public, stating, "This is my daughter," but she gave her the name Jyoti. And so the public learned her name is Jyoti Singh. And in March of 2013, her father and brother went to the institute where she had her education. She was supposed to have her final year examination, and they were shown her grades, some of her schoolwork. They said not only was she an excellent student, but because she didn't finish out her courses, we feel like we should return the course fees, which would amount to a significant amount of money. It would be about $2,300 US. And her father said, no, you should keep that money and use it to help poor students who can't afford to go to school. And he said he did that to help her soul rest in peace. And the Delhi authorities even gave the family money so they could get a new home, a new flat. And for them, this was a big deal. It had multiple bedrooms, and they were also given 300,000 rupees. This was compensation from the governments. So they used the money to pay legal expenses, to help furnish their home, and of course, put their sons through school.
That's all fine and dandy, but what is the government doing to change? What is the government going to do to help protect women?
Well, according to the information we found, the Indian Penal Code was amended to punish crimes against women more severely. So new crimes were added, including causing grievous injuries through acid attacks, sexual harassment, using force with intent to disrobe a woman, voyeurism, and stalking. They also included the death penalty in any rape case that caused the victim's death or left her in a vegetative state, and the maximum term for gang rape was doubled to 20 years. They also implemented fast-track court so they could more quickly respond to crimes against women, so they could prosecute those involved. And that is why they were able to prioritize those cases against the men who attacked Jyoti and her friend. Now, the other thing that happened because of all this is the number of rapes that were being reported rose in the years following this attack. And again, it's probably because a few more people now feel like, maybe there will be justice for me. I will report it.
And because they put out this victim's name, Jyoti Singh, it's taken away some of the stigma. It's taken away some of the shame from these victims. So they're able to come forward. It made a change by actually releasing her name. As far as all the laws and policies that passed, you know, there's different opinions out there, but I'm not sure, given slaps on the wrist are not acceptable, especially for heinous crimes, but do harsher punishments really deter crime? Does a death penalty deter crime? I mean, I don't think it does. I think here in America, we have the death penalty in a lot of different states. And does it prevent an offender from offending? No. People still commit crimes regardless that there's harsher penalties. I think that the death penalty has zero impact on our murder rate here in the States. I don't think it sends any kind of a message to people to not commit these crimes when they shouldn't. I mean, they know that they shouldn't murder people. That's just, I think that's pretty inherent, pretty common sense. But I wonder, like, what is the answer here? Where does rape culture come from? And, you know, for centuries, we read our religious books. For centuries, we're told by our governments that women are property. Marriages are a transaction. Wives should be submissive. How does this translate? Do some men not just view women as objects to be used at their disposal? What did the one man in this case, he said, why was she out late at night? And all I could think of was Brock Turner's father saying, that's a steep price to pay for 20 minutes of action. What about 40 minutes of these men's actions? That's the mindset people have. It's the mindset that a lot of men have. So you can do the harsher punishments. We can demand that they be hanged in a city square publicly if we want, but it's the culture. It's what we've been taught from the time we were children. That's how you make the change.
Right. It starts with how you say things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that one of these criminals said it was irresponsible for her to be out that late, that she wasn't a decent girl to do that. That's just something for people to think about. I know most of our listeners have already thought about this.
Yeah. I think it should be common sense to most people. But
now, Jody's mother, she talked about how there was this huge public outcry, right? The system needs to be changed. But she said, girls are still being raped. They're still being targeted. And she talks about how it starts with the parents. They need to educate their children. It needs to start at home. And Jody's father said he doesn't see any real change because the one government stepped up to try and take these men and make them pay for the crimes they committed against Jody. But then there was a change in government later, right? A new government came in. So obviously they're going to do things a little differently. But he said every day there are still girls being raped across the country. And there's still people that don't think they're anything more than trivial matters. Mm-hmm. I mean, all I have to say at the end of this, Justin, is that Jody paid a terrible price, but I think she has allowed people to focus and brought some awareness around the world to these issues. And I would hope that there are people out there who are actually pausing and willing to understand that culturally there are problems, right? And it doesn't matter whether it's India, America, or Spain, or wherever. Every country has problems. Every country could do a hell of a lot better when it comes to this issue of rape culture and holding men responsible or anyone responsible when they commit such crimes. Never miss an episode of Generation Y. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. Our TikTok is at Gen Y Pod. Our Instagram is at Generation Y Podcast. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.